Well, a very pleasant interlude there from Doug Maines and Josh Michaels here, our Live Music Friday performers here live in Studio S today. That's Doug on guitar and Josh on cello. We don't often have, Josh isn't the first cello player we've had in here. In fact, Seren Bagratuni was performed here in Studio S, but we don't often get a cello. So it's a special treat to have them here. And lots more from half the members of Doug Maines and the City Folk here. They got a new CD coming out soon with a live performance scheduled very soon as well at the Loft in Lansing. So more from these guys. We'll yuck it up a little bit, and we'll hear a lot more music before the end of the hour. I'm Mark Bayshore. This is Current State on WKAR. Lansing officials appear to be close to enacting a moratorium, an ordinance, on marijuana businesses in the city. Some put the number of pot shops in Lansing at 60 or 70, possibly more. Supporters of a moratorium say that's many more than the city needs, and the businesses need greater regulation. We'll get two perspectives on the issue today. In a moment, we'll hear from the owner of a recently opened marijuana dispensary in Lansing. First, we will hear from a supporter of a moratorium and ordinance. Carol Wood is a longtime member of the Lansing City Council. She currently serves as chair of the council's Public Safety Committee. I spoke with her yesterday and first asked about one part of the proposed ordinance, and that's requiring the licensing of all marijuana caregivers.
What this would mean is a caregiver would have to deal only with their five patients that they have, and they would have to be on site dealing with their five patients. That's a big difference than what we have out there right now. Muskegon is an example of where this is on the books and has worked for a community.
How is that not working now? What problem do we face that part of the ordinance would address?
I think we're looking at the fact that I could hire you as a business person. I could hire Mark Bayshore to stand behind the counter that is not a caregiver. I could pay you a salary. And as someone comes in, they can show you their card. They might not understand, you know, what you're using the medical marijuana for and able to give you any recommendations or anything else, and you're just selling to them. The state statute does not allow that. There is supposed to be just between a relationship between a caregiver and a patient.
It would also prohibit operating as a primary caregiver in a residence. Is that legal now?
Currently, it is. It is legal now. As a caregiver, I can have a home occupation in a neighborhood, and I can grow up to 72 plants. What we're seeing is some unintended consequences anywhere from the fact of odors that are being admitted from the growth process and processing of medical marijuana, anywhere to the amount of traffic that are coming in and out of a neighborhood. This is a more of a commercial entity, so this moving it into a commercial corridor takes away from the repercussions in a neighborhood.
Carol Wood is my guest. We are talking about a proposal in the city of Lansing for a moratorium on medical marijuana establishments and a medical marijuana ordinance. Let me play devil's advocate for just a second, Carol. We're talking about a substance with medicinal benefits, the regulated use of which was legally approved by Michigan voters. What if there's enough demand to sustain dozens of such businesses in Lansing, and it appears there may be? Why not? Isn't this commercial activity the city could arguably use more of?
Well, again, there are different regulations out there for other businesses that sometimes take a look at that proliferation based on the requirements that you need. There were very few regulations that were put forth in the state statute, and many of those are in a gray area of trying to understand what the exact law is and what needs to be out there. When you look at the number of, and we'll take pharmacies as an example, the number of pharmacies, they have to go through state and federal regulations before they're allowed to dispense drugs. And they have to be in the right zoning component and a number of those things. Right now, there's none of that that's being applied to, quote, medical marijuana dispensaries. Again, I think what we're seeing in other communities in Detroit and Ann Arbor and Muskegon and places that have put these ordinances in effect, that they have put caps and limits on the number of licenses based on the number of people that are in their community, similar to what you get with liquor control. It's based on a population. The primary thing is a safe environment for patients to be able to get a drug that they believe and their doctors believe that will help them. There are some very good dispensaries that are out there that are doing business. There are some that aren't. Anywhere from the fact that they're allowed to ingest the marijuana on site, the fact that they have tour buses that are going from shop to shop to look at the marijuana that are there. I mean, those are issues that we deal with, and we as a municipality have to look at those regulations.
If safety is an issue, whose safety is most in question as far as you're concerned here?
Right now, as a patient, there's no labeling that's required on the medical marijuana, so you don't know who you're buying it from or who produced it. There's no testing of medical marijuana, so you don't know what the product is that you're getting and what additives might be added into it. We have one dispensary that's very close to a playground, and that neighbors have on more than one occasion, I will say I drove by and saw it myself, witnessed people sitting in lawn chairs watching kids play soccer while they're toking on their medical marijuana. That's not something that I believe anyone thought of when they were dealing with supporting the legislation that's before us that we're dealing with today.
Where is that?
Well, it's Got Meds. It's on the corner of Cedar and Holmes. And, we've had a number of complaints from residents over in that neighborhood of some of the things that have gone on there.
That was the Lansing City Council's Carol Wood. Let's turn now to Michael Mays. Michael is a Lansing native, now mainly based in Chicago. He is the CEO of GreenWave, which is Lansing's newest marijuana dispensary. That's at Cedar in Oakland. It's a family business he runs with his brother, Thomas. Now in Chicago, Mr. Mays is also the CEO of Quantum 9. The company describes itself on its website as a cannabis consulting and technology organization. Michael Mays, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
I want to get your responses to several of Carol Wood's comments, but let me ask you first how you generally feel about a moratorium on marijuana dispensaries in Lansing.
Sure. The progression of cannabis law in any form is a positive thing for the industry. Whenever you can put rigor around patient care, security, and things like laboratory testing, it's a very, very positive thing. I myself am uniquely qualified for this. Quantum 9, we've practiced in 12 countries around the world working on public policy, patient advocacy, and licensing. We actually wrote the CBD pediatric bill in Kentucky, and I personally have letters of recommendation from Senator Perry Clark, Senator Michael Jacobs in Illinois, and the German ministry. And my brother Thomas and I have been quoted in the Lansing State Journal and the City Pulse. And overall, I think the industry is heading towards FDA standards, and that's an exciting thing.
And you don't fear that? That doesn't concern you at Quantum 9 or at GreenWave? You got nothing to fear by greater regulation or an ordinance, let's say?
Yeah. So at GreenWave, we try to propose and stand by the most stringent regulations using FDA guidelines.
Okay.
For patient care. Go ahead.
But how do you feel about the moratorium, though? Do you have a feeling about that one way or the other?
My general sense is that it will increase the level of competition, which will also increase the level of patient care and the products that they receive.
How would it increase the competition? I mean, couldn't it conceivably, if there weren't a moratorium, you'd have more and more businesses and increase the competition?
Well, increasing the competition can be in a couple of different facets. For us, we try to excel to a level of excellence. So we promote four pillars of excellence at GreenWave. One is a patient-focused approach, laboratory-tested products from ISO-certified laboratories, and we're currently conveniently located at 500 East Oakland, but we try to provide a safe and secure environment, and that's kind of the main issues that Carol's talking about. You know, she's concerned about distance between schools, which I completely understand. You know, the 1,000-foot rule has been adopted, even a 500-foot rule, even in some territories around the country and around the world, and as FDA rigor starts to come into the cannabis industry, the companies that align themselves with the highest regulations will be the most successful.
Carol suggests, and quite a few others, she's not alone, it's the Wild West in Lansing. It's an explosion of perhaps well over 70 pot shops, according to her, unregulated, unlicensed, potentially dangerous, I guess. To what extent is she right?
So the Michigan Marijuana Act is evolving. You know, there's definitely some shortcomings, but that's the case in many nascent industries. There are more stringent regulations in any industry constantly evolving. So from the regulatory standpoint, you know, they're trying to do the best that they can possibly do with some of the guidelines set forth prior. So precedence in this industry really hasn't been set. Colorado is giving us an excellent roadmap, but at the end of the day, regulators have to educate themselves on what is good and what is bad. And even in the pharmaceutical industry, new standards are all constantly evolving. So laws change, they become more stringent, and at the end of the day, the quality of the medicine that the patient is receiving is being excelled to a level that we at GreenWave are very, very excited about. It's a very, very exciting time in the industry because finally cannabis is starting to become undemonized. It's no longer a taboo subject to have a conversation about the palliative and therapeutic effects of cannabis. And it's being used to alleviate conditions and combat illnesses. And that is the next wave of healthcare.
Michael Mays is the CEO and co-proprietor of GreenWave, a medical marijuana dispensary in Lansing. We're talking about a proposed moratorium and ordinance to better regulate marijuana in the capital city. Now, the proposed ordinance calls for all caregivers to be licensed and to be limited to only the five patients they grow for. What do you think about that provision?
So if we adopted the five patient per caregiver rule, given the fact that there's between 170,000 and 182,000 patients in Michigan currently in the registry, that would equate to about 36,000 shops in the state. Now, that would be way more than 50, 30, 60, what number have you in Lansing? And my stance on it is as long as the shops are provisioning highly tested laboratory, ISO-tested laboratory products to patients, they should be able to operate.
It would ban caregivers from operating in private residences. Is that a good move in your view?
Well, when you have a commercial cultivation facility, you go through incredibly stringent quality assurance measures. For instance, a cultivator may have to change out of their street clothes, go through a shower, and then gown to actually access the propagation and cultivation areas. And that is grown to a level of standard where it brings more stringency on the way it's cultivated opposed to where it's cultivated.
That can't be how everybody does it, though, is it, Michael?
It isn't, but I foresee that the only way that it can be done in the future. A lot of the problems that happen within cultivation areas are brought in by the actual cultivator themselves. So stringency around quality assurance of the person that actually walks into the room is going to be paramount to ensuring that the products are free of mold and other adulterants and so forth.
Describe for us how you operate GreenWave. If I had a marijuana card from a doctor and I walked into your business there at Oakland and Cedar, who would assist me? Would a qualified caregiver assist me, or who?
Correct. Caregivers at GreenWave are trained and given protocols and procedures, as well as standard operating procedures, on how to care for patients. Each caregiver is assigned five individuals and patients that they care for. And the first thing that we establish is, you know, have there been adverse reactions with cannabis in the past? What are the conditions that they're suffering from? And really diving into how cannabis can help them. We tell them what some of our products have been used for, as well as as well as the best way to deliver the medicine as well.
You'll see signs at some dispensaries saying armed guards on premises. Is safety, how big an issue is safety in your business?
Well, safety is paramount in any industry. You want to make sure that the patients that are in the building are safe. You want to make sure that the employees in the building are safe and the products are safe from diversion. So all of our doors are electromagnetic, with key fob entry, solid wood doors with steel frames around them. We have 24-hour video streaming and recording that's recorded on-site as well as off-premise.
Can you see how people who don't understand the business as well as you do are given pause by the fact that armed guards are necessary at all? Does it concern you that armed guards are necessary to really operate some number of these businesses?
Well, I mean, we'd be more than happy to invite people to GreenWave and show them how we do things. As far as security goes, that's more of a perception thing. If a patient feels safe in a facility, they may feel safe with or without a security guard. I mean, in a lot of government buildings, you see armed guards there as well. And, you know, I see armed guards at the airport. It's not necessarily a need or a want. It's more of a perception thing.
You're among the most recent marijuana businesses to open here in Lansing. There were already a lot of businesses open and operating. Why did you take the plunge with so many people already doing this?
Sure. The patient population in Michigan is the second highest in the nation. California has about 1 million patients, which own about 50% of the market share. At 170,000 to 182,000 patients in Michigan, it's a very, very mature market where patient bases have been established. In the emerging states, there's a very, very short list of debilitating illnesses that patients can even get access to. So in Michigan, it's very compelling for us to help as many patients as possible with a wide array of different issues that they can address using cannabis.
Michael Mays is the CEO and co-proprietor of GreenWave, a medical marijuana dispensary in Lansing. We've been talking about the medical marijuana business and a proposed moratorium and ordinance to better regulate marijuana in Lansing. Michael Mays, thank you.
Thank you.
By swinging God his words to a mosaic God, like a feather from his mouth, a feather to the ground. And he dyed his hair black to keep his name. Cigarettes and booze and the glory of fame. Cigarettes and booze and the glory. So he was only one man to roads in the woods. He would travel both and he wished he could. But he dined at the table of saintly men and got a taste of the wine he might try again. A taste of the wine he might try again. He had a river and flowing at its side. There was nothing gonna let him on by. So he shivered down to the bone in fear and in dread of his memorial stones. Pockets of selfish men, he shoved his monsters under blankets thin, and he ran to the people who turned inside. Had a taste of the water, but not the tide. A taste of the water, but not the tide. They had a river and flowing at its side. There was nothing gonna let them on by. So they shivered down to the bone in fear and in dread of their memorial stones. Fear and in dread of their memorial stones. And they would fight like David if they could. And they would do the right thing like we all know they should. But even the king was not that good. Simple things and said it was enough. The woods couldn't float when the waters turned rough. Some got lost in the ocean deep. Had a taste of the salt, but not enough to see. A taste of the salt, but not enough to see. We had a river flowing at its side. There was nothing gonna let us on by. So we shivered down to the bone in fear and in dread of our memorial stones. Fear and in dread of our memorial stones. And I would fight like David if I could. And I would do the right thing like I know full well I should. But even the king was not that good.
Doug Maines, Josh Michaels, performing live here on A Current State Live Music Friday. The track is called Like David. Their new CD, it's Doug Maines and the City Folk is the name of the larger ensemble. We got half the band here today on Live Music Friday. Their new CD is called These Broken Members. More from Doug Maines and Josh Michaels here in just a little bit on Live Music Friday. You've got Current State here on 90.5 WKAR. Many migratory birds that spend their winters in southern climates are returning home to their northern breeding grounds. Great Lakes waterways make Michigan an attractive rest stop for many birds that live in Canada and Alaska. Scientists are watching one particular bird with great interest. In the last 40 years, the rusty blackbird has experienced an enormous population decline on the magnitude of 95% or more. All across North America, bird watchers are taking part in an annual tradition called the Rusty Blackbird Blitz in an effort to document this elusive species. Current State's Kevin Lavery went on a mini expedition to find some rusties, and he files this report.
The Maple River State Game Area is one of my favorite Michigan landmarks. Nestled 40 miles north of downtown Lansing on US 127, it reminds me on my northbound excursions that I'm headed toward a more rustic place. Heading south, it's a welcoming vista that tells me I'm almost home. I've often gazed out across the Maple River's textured waterscape of amber reeds rising gently from the marshes. That's why I missed my turnoff at first. At 65 miles per hour, you've got to slow down fast to make that sharp right turn just over the bridge. Landing here is a whole lot easier if you're a bird.
This is a great spot for migratory birds of all types.
Jonathan Lutz met me at Maple River. He's the executive director of Michigan Audubon.
So depending on what water levels are doing here, you see a variety of waterfowl. You can see shorebirds and wading birds here. Bald eagles nest in the area. And songbirds like the rusty blackbird will use this as a rest stop on their migrations northbound.
Kirby Adams joined us on this trip, too. He's a freelance writer and avid birdwatcher. Exiting Jonathan's car, Kirby wasted no time setting up his telephoto lens to search for the elusive rusty blackbird.
You've got your tripod set up here. Jonathan is looking through a lens right now, and we see a bird perched on top of a reed, it looks like, and it's got a dark outline, and who knows if that's a rusty blackbird or not.
I can tell you that it is not. That is, we're looking at a red-winged blackbird right there, a close relative of the rusty blackbird. And Jonathan has now moved the scope over, and he's looking at a common grackle, which looks even more like a rusty blackbird, but unfortunately is not our target bird right now.
This is not going to be easy. I can tell that already.
No, it's not. The rusty blackbirds, because they have declined so much in population, it's not an easy thing to find. And we're getting a little late in the year for their migration, but hopefully we'll be able to find some today.
I could just feel the big rigs were scaring the wildlife, so we headed down the path away from the freeway. Right away, we started seeing birds. Of course, none of them were rusties.
There's a yellow-rumped warbler right here.
Oh, God.
It's my first warbler of the year, so... it's in... oh, shoot, where did it go? Oh, it just flew.
I got him.
Cool.
The path we walked seemed an ideal place for birds. On one side, dense forest, the perfect refuge from pursuing predators. On the other, the marshland, an all-you-can-eat bug buffet. We could even hear the frogs praying over their midday snacks. Up ahead, we spotted a long wooden walkway leading to a bird blind jutting out into the marsh. Jonathan, Kirby, and I stationed ourselves here with binoculars and microphone and waited. Plenty of red wings, blackbirds, not hockey players, and some Canada geese. Not a rusty in sight.
We're talking with Jonathan Lutz, the executive director of the Michigan Audubon Society. Why is it so important to track the rusty blackbird? What is happening with its population, and do we have any sense as to why?
Well, it's important because over the last 40 years, we've seen this massive decline. 85 to 95% of the population is gone, comparing to four decades ago. The truth is, we don't know a lot about why. We can presume that it has something to do with habitat availability, perhaps food availability. You know, the sort of key conditions that are necessary for the species to survive. There's something out of place there, and by monitoring this population, we're engaging people with a conservation concern, and at the same time, we're learning more about the birds.
Rusty blackbirds breed in the far north, from Alaska east to Newfoundland. They migrate as far south as the Gulf Coast. Michigan lies in between, right in their spring migratory path. Lutz and other wildlife experts see the rusty blackbird's startling decline as a clarion call. All across North America, the word is going out. If you see a rusty in your neck of the woods, report it.
Michigan Audubon and its partners are working to mobilize an army of citizen scientists to come out to areas of interest, like Maple River State Game Area, and survey these populations as they pass through a migration so that we have the best, most accurate information possible about the current populations of the birds, where their migratory routes are focused, and that information will help us inform conservation decisions and help answer research questions moving forward.
And this is the rusty blackbird blitz you're talking about. Have we heard any feedback yet from people in Michigan? Are we getting any sightings, any data coming in yet?
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of data being generated.
Kirby, have you been blackbird blitzing?
Yes, I have, ever since this started on March 1st, and I've been helping get the word out about it. So every time I have a chance, I've been going to appropriate habitat and especially some of the areas that we identified last year as what we're calling important areas to look at again this year to see if they're using the same spots over and over again.
And have you seen some this spring?
Yes, I have. The first ones, it was a little late this year because March was cold, and it wasn't until late March that I actually saw my first one. But yep, I have in several different areas gotten some. Not as many as I hoped, but I am starting to see some, or have so far.
An hour into our field trip, all seemed futile. I pondered the type of patience Kirby Adams must have to even have found any rusty blackbirds at all this spring. We turned to leave, and just then, a master took me to school. There they were, hiding yards ahead of us in the trees.
Oh, awesome.
We were just ready to leave, and you found some.
We did. They're about 30 yards into the woods, and the reason we're able to see them today, of course, is leaves haven't come out on the trees, so we've got a really nice view in of at least a dozen rusty blackbirds.
And they're far away in the forest. I'm really amazed you guys picked them out.
Well, all the credit goes to Kirby. he was walking up the path and saw some movement in the woods and decided to take a look.
Kirby, you are the bird whisperer.
Well, I don't know if I'd go that far, but sometimes you get lucky, and just as we were about to give up and leave, the bird turned up, and that's how it often goes.
Jonathan Lutz is the executive director of the Michigan Audubon Society, Kirby Adams, a freelance journalist, and bird watcher. Gentlemen, thank you for meeting me on a beautiful day at the Maple River State Game Area. Thanks, Kirby.
Thanks, Kevin.
Thanks, Jonathan.
Thanks, Kevin. Have a great day.
For Current State, I'm Kevin Lavery.
Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Waiting for this moment to arise. You were only waiting for this moment to arise. You were only waiting for this moment to arise.
Well, Doug Maines and Josh Michaels are just all fired up about the opportunity to follow the Beatles here on WKAR's Current State. We get to follow those guys.
Yeah.
Well, but we are delighted to have Doug and Josh here today. They are half of the band Doug Maines and the City Folk. This is a track called Stone's Awakening.
Drop like bricks to the earth, shaking the ground, my feet and my worth. But where we find brokenness, we're sure to find grace, and grace leads us onward, deceit with the same soul. Grace leads us onward, deceit with the saints, and part her and come on. To the bone, come claim the size your own. So when we fall, we will rise from our graves, we will rise from a world that is breaking like stones. Awakening will rise, and we've come a long way through the course of one night. Dreams of the morning swallowed our fright, and all is conquered, but all is in well. In the depths of our souls, the remnants of hell. Depths of our souls, the remnants of hell. And part her and come on down. Cracked and dry to the bone, famous size our own. So before we will rise from our graves, we will rise from a world that is breaking like stones. Awakening will rise. And naked I came from my mother's womb. Naked I march at heart to my tomb. And if our goal is a lamp filled with oil, we can take on every fear and trouble. We can take on every fear and trouble and part her and come on down. We're cracked and tried to the bone. Come claim a size your own. From our graves we will rise, from a world that is breaking like stones. Awakening, rejoice, not over me, oh my enemy. Rejoice, not over me, oh my enemy, oh my. Is breaking like stones, awakening will rise.
Stones Awakening, Doug Maines and Josh Michaels, half of Doug Maines and the City Folk, performing live here in Studio S on a Live Music Friday. That's one track from their new release, These Broken Members, and you will see Doug and Josh and the other members of the City Folk perform at the Loft in Lansing coming up on May 14th. Welcome to WKAR. You guys sound great today.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having us.
There is a lot of drama to your sound. Talk to us about that.
Doug's a pretty dramatic guy.
So. Yeah, I'm actually not a very dramatic guy. At least I don't show it. I think I'm.
It certainly comes out in the music.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Well, I think I'm pretty introspective. I've described myself as obsessively introspective, and I tend to be kind of an introverted person who has learned how to be extroverted, I guess. And so I think that when I started writing songs when I was a kid, it was this very internal child who just enjoyed playing guitar, and I just would lock myself in the room and write. And I think it definitely, especially as I've gotten older and developed the skill, it's become a very personal thing for me, a very therapeutic thing for me. And so a lot of my inner thoughts and struggles and all that kind of stuff kind of doesn't come out in the day-to-day. I kind of hide it behind this wonderful smile that I've got and the baby blue eyes. But
like a lot of performers, I imagine. Yeah. You know, I mean, yeah. Do you perform all original compositions? Are these all your songs, Doug?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
You would appear to labor over the message quite a bit.
Yeah.
Do you spend a lot of time on the words?
Yeah.
On a message? Do you feel like each track has a message or is a story with a particular arc to it?
Yeah, for sure. I think when I first started playing music, it was because I was a kid who liked the guitar. And as I've grown, I found myself being much more of a words person than I am a music person. So it's kind of like my music, I would say, supports my lyrics more than my lyrics
Got
support
it.
The music.
Of course. Now, in almost invariably, the word classical gets used to describe your sound. Is that just because there's a cello in the band, or do you actually perform? I take it you don't actually perform classical pieces. There's just this kind of classical vibe
right.
because of your cello, Josh.
Is I think that comes about. So the our upright bassist and violinist are both middle school orchestra teachers, and they both actually went to the music school here at State as well. And so the two of them and I all come from a very classically trained background. So I think we kind of bring that like foundation to a lot of the music that Doug writes.
Yeah, yeah.
And they kind of mash up together.
It kind of holds together really, really well, though. I mean, I sit here and I think of the collaborations with Edgar Meyer and Yo-Yo Ma.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine you've heard of those guys. And, you know, their collaborations with Chris Thiele, for example, of Nickel Creek and...
Right.
And so it's kind of a genre bending kind of thing. Do you view yourself as kind of a genre bender? Blurring the lines between folk and classical, or blurring the lines between any other kinds of music?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. We've definitely kind of fallen into this term, I guess, describing ourselves as classical folk. I think every musician likes to think and hope that they have a unique bend on music. So I'd like to think that we do. I don't. I guess that's all I can say is I like to think we do. But yeah, I definitely don't have the musical training that everyone else does. So that kind of bubbles up in a unique way, just kind of out of ignorance. Just I do what I think sounds good, and sometimes that means goofy rhythm things or...
How long does it take to put together a good to write a good song? How much time? I mean, I'm struck by the lyrical complexity to this. You've obviously got to coordinate your guitar
right.
with the other players here. Yeah. How long does it take for a good song to go from the very beginning to the very end?
Mm-hmm. I think
on average.
Yeah. It's hard to say. I think personally for me, sometimes a song can hit me in a day. Sometimes it takes years. That like David tune I wrote the first verse like 6 years or probably 3 years before I wrote the rest of the song. So sometimes it takes that much time. Sometimes like the next one we're going to play, it comes about in a couple of days. And then once I bring it to the band, it varies again. I think it takes a while of performing and playing together where it really feels like it locks in. And that's when you start noticing each band member doing really crazy things. And you're like, wow, how long have you been doing that?
Yeah,
that sounds great.
That's cool.
So,
well, speaking of the next song, let's hear it. This is a brand new track that is so new, it's not even on the new CD. The new CD is called These Broken Members. This is a track called Letters. Mm-hmm.
We don't kill ourselves, we implode. From the depths of ticking in our souls. And we have had a lot of victories, so the mystery is I wrote my letters from home. With a love for my mother and dreams of a father will live long, long after I'm gone. In the ink on the paper, every word and they will savor long, long after I'm gone. Was it too much to ask? And you admit to loving me? Was I too much to love? Maybe not quite enough. Would you shake my shoulders and wrestle my mind with me? I'm too weak and too blind to see that it's not over. It's not over. And I wasted those hours all alone. A thousand other things that I could have done. But I reason, the irrational reason is fallible, so I wrote my worth in these words. Each one carefully crafted, handpicked, and decided to live long, long after I'm gone. Like soldiers in a war zone, that old Jerusalem thorn, they'll live long, long after I'm gone. Was it too much to ask that you admit to loving me? Was I too much to love? Maybe not quite enough. Would you shake my shoulders and wrestle my mind with me? I'm too weak and too blind to see that it's not over. It's not over. To say with my pride in the way, and I was paralyzed by ignorance. And I want freedom from myself. That's the hardest to find. I want love from someone else, but I need peace. It's not over.
Doug Maines and Josh Michaels there. The song is called Letters. Their newest CD is called These Broken Members. And again, Doug Maines and his band, The City Folk, perform at the Loft in Lansing coming up on May 14th. The CD that you're about to release... had been, most of it had been recorded by 2013, but then you took a break. You stopped.
Right.
How come?
It's kind of there's a big answer packed behind that, but it's kind of simple as well. So we recorded this album like 2013, about 3 years ago this month. And, I think that at the time I had a lot of that, obsessive introspectiveness kind of bubbled within me a lot, and it was kind of in an unchecked way. And so I developed over the course of a couple years that we had been playing, where we had really good momentum on the exterior. I was showing my baby blues and smiling, but on the inside I didn't really have much. I guess maybe the music was my only outlet, which is a really healthy thing, but there's other things that can be very beneficial as well. And so I kind of found myself, especially with this album, which I think there are some very personal songs for me in this album that we're releasing. And I think that I just freaked myself out, and I kind of just quit music somewhat dramatically and kind of said, I'm done with this. It's too much inner turmoil, I guess. Yeah, for a while I was just thinking that, you know, this album, which I found was a very personal piece, would just stay with me, and it would just be a personal thing that I went back to and listened to every once in a while.
But you reached a point where, right, where obviously now it's a CD. How did the arc change?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot changed. I got married in the last couple years, and definitely having that immediate support system in my wife has been a huge help. I've started going to counseling, which I'm not really going right now, but I went for the course of a good while, and that was incredibly healthy for me. And then just kind of, I guess, opening up to my friends and family as more of a support system of a lot of the anxiety and kind of dark frustrations that I had had. Those were definitely huge elements to bringing us back. And I think as I started kind of coming out of that darkness, I guess, I started grasping on to a fresh perspective and a new approach to it, kind of being this, having this mentality of being the loud voice for so many quiet hearts, which is what Billy Joel, it's a quote, and he says, musicians want to be the loud voice for so many quiet hearts. Mm. And I think I am a quiet heart, and I think that music is where a lot of that comes out.
You adopted that role?
Right,
you feel?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And so that's, I mean, that's that was a huge motivation in releasing. It's like, okay, these are very raw and personal songs for me, but hopefully people can relate to them and, and wrestle with me in them.
We want to thank Doug Maines and Josh Michaels for being with us here today. It's been great talking with them. The music's been great and the conversation's been great. So we thank you very much.
Thanks for having
We're going to have you guys play us out after I remind our listeners with Monday's program in mind. For our foodie listeners, how do you feel about the city's restaurant options? Is Lansing keeping up with current food trends? Well, City Pulse contributor Mark Nixon has some thoughts on these matters. We will talk with Mark about the changing dining scene here in Lansing. That and lots more Monday on Current State. Kevin Lavery did a masterful job directing our show today. Peter Worf is our program's executive producer. Drew Hill did a masterful job of engineering as well, I should say. And Scott Pohl, Katie Cook, and Jamie Paisley weren't half bad either. We want to thank everybody for listening today, and we're going to have Josh Michaels and Doug Maines play us out. Hope you guys wish you nothing but best with the new CD and the performance coming up at the Loft. Thanks for being with us today.
Brought you down to a little church in the middle of our town, and your sisters were there, but your mother escaped to a sanctuary in her own.